This is July 30th, 1973. It's Mike Dalton again in Rampart, Alaska. There's a mosquito buzzing around my ear here. Just a minute, I'm going to catch him. And again, or still, I'm in Harry Have Relax home here in Rampart. I started reading this yesterday and I was interrupted two or three times, so I'm going to read it again. It's a clipping that Harry Haverlack has in his own personal files. It's titled Chronology of Gold Discoveries of the North by Joseph Ulmer, E.M. Initials E.M. following his name. I don't know what that means. There is no date on this, but I'll go through and read this as it's written, as it's printed. Again, Chronology of Gold Discoveries of North. Peter Doroshin, C.E. Russian, Cook Inlet, in 1843. Alexander Buck Choquette, Stickeen River, 1861. Andrew Libby, Nigulluk River, Seward Peninsula, parentheses Council, 1863. Then there's George Holt, Upper Yukon Salmon River, 1878. Next is Thiebert and McCullough, Dease Lake, Cassie RBC, 1872. Next entry is C. Vincent Baranovich, Baranovich, the first quartz mine, Kassan, Kassan, K-A-S-A-A-N, 1865. Then there's the next entry is Joe Juno and Jay Harris, Juneau, Alaska, 1881. 40 Mile Upper Yukon, Franklin, 1884. The Circle District, John Pavlov Minook, Sergei S-E-R-G-E-I, Gologov, Sarovsky, I'll spell that out again. It's all one name. Sergei S-E-R-G-E-I, Gologov, G-O-L-O-G-O-F-F. Last name is Z, as in zebra, A-R-O-F-S-K-Y. And Peter Pawoff Pitka, Pitka Bar, 1892. Rampart, Jam Manuk Pavlov, Eureka, 1898. But, let's see, that's the way it reads. In parentheses, Eureka, 1898, and then 1893 for Rampart. I'll read that all over again, just the way it's printed here. Rampart, comma, John, parentheses, Manuk, parentheses, Pavlov, comma, parentheses, Eureka, 1898, parentheses, 1893. Next entry is Dawson, Bob Henderson, Gold Bottom in 96, and George Carmack, August 17th on Bonanza in 1896. Council and Golovin, by A. Libby and George Melsing, Melsing, M-E-L-S-I-N-G, Ophir Creek, 1897. Nome, O.E. Lindblom, Jaffet Lindberg, John Berntesen, Anvil Creek, Berntesen, B-R-Y-N-T-E-S-E-N. That discovery was in 1898. Next entry he has is Kobuk, Lewis Lloyd, on the report of Captain Barney Cogan, 1898. Koyukuk, John Folger, Nolan, in parentheses, John Bremer, Peter Johnson, and Jim Bender, 1888, but discovery listed as 1899. Slate Creek, Hazlitt, Miller, Tyosefson, T-Y-O-S-E-F-S-O-N, 1899. Atlin, Fritz Miller and Kenny McLaren, 1899. And Candle is the next entry. Bill Blankenship, Bob Snyder, Alex Patterson, 1900. Cook Inlet, the first discovery by Lieutenant Durocian, 1834. The second discovery, 1896. Good News Bay, Cy Watamus, Watamus, in 1901. Next entry is Fairbanks by Felix Pedro, July 22, 1902. Inoko by Gaines, Spencer, Mackey, and Roki, 1906. Mackey is spelled M-A-C-K-I and Roki, R-O-K-I. Next entry is Iditarod by John Beaton and W. Dykeman, December 24, 1908. Ruby by N.P. Johnson, credited with discovery, and Charles Fernander, F-E-R-N-A-N-D-E-R, 1911. Shoshana by Bill James and Carl Whitman. That was in 1913, and they have in parentheses John F. Lake, who was in there in 1906. But Shoshana, spelled C-H-I-S-A-N-A, is credited with discovery in 1913. Next entry is Tolovana by J. Livengood and the Hudson Brothers, 1915. Dime Creek, Carl Anderson, Ryan, and Doyle, 1915. Next entry is Marshall, Road and J.C. Mills, M-I-L-L-S, 1915. And some notes at the bottom of this article. John Folger and Chapman made discovery on Chapman Creek above Tramway Bar, Koyukuk, 1898. John Folger and Aubach, A-U-B-A-C-H, found the first pay on Smith Gulch, Nolan Creek, 1899. Murray and Nolan found first pay at the mouth of Fay Pup, Nolan Creek, 80 feet deep. John F. Lake, Nelson, Charles Wagner, William McClellan, Aaron Johnson found first pay in Shoshana on Canyon Creek, now Bonanza, in 1906. John F. Lake brought 1/2 ounce of gold. Could not dig more account of Glacier Cross Creek and was out of grub. Another document that Harry Havrelock, the commissioner here in Rampart, has is a copy of an early prospectus that was put out. I think there's a date on here somewhere. I found it. Yeah. 1900. This is the Rampart City Gold Mines Company, organized under the laws of Arizona, has offices in Rampart City, Alaska, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Cleveland, Ohio. Doesn't say anything about Arizona. At any rate, 1900 or 1901. The capital stock is $1,600,000 divided into 1,600,000 shares, fully paid, non-assessable, par value $1 per share, 1,100,000 stock in treasury. Officers, Thomas J. Gillespie, president of Sharon, Pennsylvania, Reverend M. Egbert Koontz, K-O-O-N-C-E, vice president and general manager, Rampart City, Alaska, Allenson Wilcox, secretary, 555 Franklin Avenue, Cleveland, Ohio, W. W. Kitch, K-I-T-C-H, treasurer, Sharpsville, Pennsylvania, Charles Powers, fiscal agent, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, E.T. Townsend, assistant manager of mines, Rampart City, Alaska. The directors of the Rampart City Gold Mines Company are E.T. Kurtz, K-U-R-T-Z, of Newcastle, Pennsylvania, D.F. Cornell, Springfield, West Virginia, Charles Powers, Pittsburgh, PA, Thomas J. Gillespie, W.W. Kitch, Allison Wilcox, Ian Baer, B-A-E-R, of Newcastle, Pennsylvania. E.T. Townsend of Rampart. Reverend M. Egbert Kuntz, Rampart. Office, Phoenix, Arizona. The Honorable I.T. Stoddard, Resident Agent. The Savings and Trust Company, Euclid Avenue, Cleveland, Ohio, Registrar of Stock. The magistrate here, Mr. Harry Havrilak, is also the recorder, and he recently received this Xerox copy of this old prospectus for the Rampart City Gold Mines. It was sent to him with a letter of inquiry about the possibility, if the Rampart City still existed, possibilities of gold mining. Apparently it's a relative of one of these original stockholders, or perhaps one of these officers. Was written by Ralph A. Young of 1436 Bellevue Drive, Wooster, Ohio. Zip is 44691. I'm looking at another thick volume that Mr. Havrilak let me look at here in his recorder's office. First entry in this is August 20th, 1909. These are recordings of judicial proceedings. Whoever it was who was the ex officio justice of the peace didn't want his name known very widely, because I can't read it. J.H. Looks like H-U-D-G-I-N. H-U-D-G-I-N. Hudgen. Hudgen. He writes apparently he's a left-handed man. He writes a rather backhanded. Script. I'm going to skip over until I find something I can read. I just can't read this backhand script very well, so I'll just keep flipping over here until I come to something I can find readable. Well, it would be readable if someone were researching these files. I had the time, but I'm just browsing today. Here's something. Charles B. Allen, Plaintiff versus O.C. Clemens, Case Number 14, Civil. Whereas the plaintiff demands judgment against defendant for said sum and all of his costs and disbursements of this action, with a reasonable allowance for attorney fees and an advance of $10. The case, Rampart, May 22nd, 1916, U.S. Commissioner's Court. Julius Ramsdorf, Plaintiff, John A. Brown, Defendant. Greetings. Comes now, plaintiff claims and alleges that during the winter of 1915 and 16, merchandise to the amount of $135.48 was purchased by and delivered to the defendant on this account. Cash payments of and $45.50 have been made by the defendant, and credits are allowed to the extent of $48.65. It therefore is a balance due of $41.33, which the defendant has refused to pay. Plaintiff therefore asks the court to give judgment against the defendant for the sum of $41.33, together with 8% interest since February 15th, 16, and cost and disbursements of this action. They didn't seem to have too many court cases in the early part of the century here in Rampart, but just browsing through this thick volume here, most of them seem to be for recovery of money due to the local trader. Can't say that I blame the trader for wanting to collect. There's one that's way over $500, a bill for over $537.69. And on February 14th, 1921, case number 21 listed in this volume, an insanity case, complaint made by a woman's husband charging his wife with being insane and naming some witnesses. The commissioner then issues a warrant of arrest for this woman in the name of the United States of America to appear for a hearing. And there's a The commissioner is, at this time, in 1921, is W. E. Garrett, G-A-R-R-E-T-T. He signs it W. E. Garrett, Commissioner and Ex-Officio Probate Judge, Rampart Precinct, 4th Division, Territory of Alaska. And executing this warrant for this woman's arrest or for her appearance before the commissioner is the Deputy Marshal S.J. Anders, A-N-D-E-R-S. And here is the subpoena, is the language of the subpoena written for to this woman who is whose husband alleges that she is insane. We command you that all and singular business and excuses being laid aside, you appear and attend before the undersigned, a commissioner and ex-officio probate judge for the Rampart Precinct, 4th Judicial Division, Territory of Alaska, at his office in Rampart, in the town of Rampart, Alaska, on the 14th day of February, 1921, at the hour of 5 p.m. of said day, there to testify in the above entitled action now pending in said court, and if you fail to attend, you will forfeit to the party aggrieved the sum of $50 and all damage which may be sustained by your failure to attend, and you are not to depart the court without the leave of the court. Given under my hand and seal this 14th day of February, 1921, W. E. Garrett, Commissioner and Probate Judge. A six-man jury was impaneled, and three people testified as to, quote, such acts and languages came before them and were questioned by the defense and the jury, and the jury returned the following verdict in writing. In the matter of the investigation of Mrs. Blank Blank to sanity, we, the jury, impaneled to inquire into the sanity of Mrs. Blank Blank, having made a thorough investigation, do find the said Mrs. Blank Blank is insane, signed by 6 members of the jury. Finding of the jury in the above case number 21 is insane, this 14th day of February, 1921, approved and concurred in by W. E. Garrett, Probate Judge. This lady then was, in the language of the court, the above named Mrs. Blank Blank, having been brought before me, W. Garrett, a United States Commissioner and ex-official probate judge for the Rampart Precinct, 4th Division, Territory of Alaska, and this court having convened a jury to determine the mental condition of the said Mrs. Blank Blank, and the jury having found the above-named Mrs. Blank Blank insane as charged, and this court concurring in and approved the finding of the jury, it is therefore the judgment of this court that the said Mrs. Blank Blank be confined in the asylum at Morningside, Oregon, until released therefrom according to law, given under my hand and official seal this 14th day of February, 1921. W. E. Garrett, Probate Judge. Now we'll go back to 1900. This is another volume. Case number one in this particular volume, United States versus Dan Carolan. C-A-R-O-L-A-N. The charge, murder. Coroner's jury verdict recorded and received. Warrant issued for the arrest of Dan Carolan. Warrant returned to the office and defendant brought before me. Defendant filed motion for continuance. Motion granted and hearing continued until December 26, 1900 at 11 a.m. Subpoena issued on behalf of the United States. Subpoena returned and filed. Case called at 11 o'clock a.m. Prisoner in court and represented by his counsel, J.L. Greer, it looks like. Green, it is. The testimony taken at the coroner's inquest read to the defendant and the verdict from the coroner's jury. T.M. Crawford, eyewitness to the shooting, sworn and testified for and on behalf of the plaintiff. Ben F. Baker, I can't read that writing. The trading company at Rampart and whose employee the deceased was, testified on behalf of the plaintiff. William D. Wolfe, clerk in the Alaska Commercial Company store at Rampart, was sworn and testified on behalf of the plaintiff. Catarins, a soldier to whom the defendant gave himself up after the shooting, being only sworn testified on behalf of the plaintiff. William Schreiner, sergeant and soldier who got the gun of the defendant after his surrender, identified the gun and belt of cartridges as those of the defendant, and that he turned these over to the deputy U.S. Marshal Godfrey Gunkel, testified on behalf of, Godfrey Gunkel also testified on behalf of the plaintiff. This is all on, this is all on December 26th. Dr. H.V. Tweedy, attending physician of Joseph The deceased testified as to the nature of the wound, the wounds and their places, and effects, course of bullets, etc., on behalf of the plaintiff. Counsel for defendant abuses the court and refuses to obey the order of the court. Was fined by the court $25 for attempt. Contempt and given until 11 o'clock a.m. of the 27th day of December to pay the fine. Defendant demanded a counsel for the hearing and none could be obtained. The court ordered a continuance until the 27th day of December 1900 at 11 a.m. at the same place. The officer in charge of the prisoner by order of the court will keep him until that day and hour when he is to produce him in the court. Court takes a recess until 11 a.m. December 27th, 1900. On December 27th at 11 a.m., court reconvenes with the prisoner in court. The fine by the prisoner's counsel is remitted. Dr. Daniel B. McCann, Rampart, Alaska, testified on behalf of the plaintiff. Two bullets introduced in evidence as Plaintiff Exhibit C, one identified absolutely by D.B. McCann. Defendant waives right to make any statement under the statute. Witnesses on behalf of the plaintiff were T.M. Crawford of Olive Rampart, Ben F. Baker, William D. Wolf, George Cattarino, William Schreiner, Dr. H. B. Tweedy, Dr. D. B. McCann. Let's see. May 28th, there's a case listed in this docket book. May 28th, 1901. It was a complaint made by little Ellen, a squaw, and one of her witnesses. Besides little Ellen, the squaw, is Lucy Baggage. They were charged as Frank Kroska, K-R-O-S-K-A. Apparently he was giving liquor to Indians. And there's a case of murder, United States versus Thomas Evans. This is January 3rd, 1902. An affidavit by the deputy marshal that he took Thomas Evans into custody on Little Manook Creek, Rampart Precinct, on the 6th of January, 1901. Or 19-2, it should be. He made a mistake there. That should be 19-2. Here's an entry on October 15th, 19-2, the United States against E.H. Yander, the complainant sworn to by George Dribulus, D-R-I-B-E-L-B-U-S. Deputy United States Marshal charging the defendant E.H. Zander with the crime of petty larceny for stealing one lantern on the 5th day of October 1902, the property of Melton Fleischman. 15th of October, a warrant was issued for the arrest of the defendant. In this case, the defendant pleaded guilty and was sentenced to serve some time in the cooler here in Rampart. So on October 16th, he was invited by the court to go to jail, and the deputy marshal did what he was told and took him to jail. On October 29th, 1902, there was a complaint by George Dribulus, charging Maggie Thompson with the crime of keeping a body house in Rampart. A warrant was issued by the court for the arrest of said Maggie Thompson and delivered to George Dribulus, Deputy United States Marshal, to execute. The marshal returned with the warrant and brought the defendant Maggie Thompson into court. The court, after being fully advised on the premises and being convinced that the said Maggie Thompson had been influenced by other parties and the said defendant being an ignorant Indian squaw and was not aware of the fact that she was committing an offense and that the said defendant could not pay the fine prescribed by law for such offenses and to commit the said Indian to jail would have an injurious effect upon her, the court therefore orders and adjudges the said defendant to be and hereby is fined $10 and the cost of this action. Given under my hand this 29th day of November, 1902, J. Lindley Green, Commissioner and ex officio justice of the peace. October 29th, the said defendant, having fully paid her fine and the court and the cost, is hereby ordered discharged by Mr. J. Lindley Green, Commissioner and ex officio justice of the peace, Rampart, Alaska. October 29th, 1902. On the same day, October 29th, 1902, there's another court case filed, United States versus M. Lawson, and he is charged with giving whiskey to an Indian. Lawson pleaded guilty, was sentenced to 6 months in the pokey. On the side of this entry in the official log, written just on the margin, the defendant, M. Lawson, was released from jail on April 6th because the sentence had expired. Signed by J. Lindley Green. Continuing reading from criminal docket. This is October 29th, 1902, is it? Yeah, 1902, October 29th, 1902. This is United States versus W. Jenkins. Complaint having been made before me on the oath charging W. Jenkins with the crime of being a vagrant. So a warrant was issued, and off went the marshal to arrest W. Jenkins for being a vagrant. He was brought into court that day. He was advised of the charges against him, and he entered a plea of not guilty. Now I quote, and said defendant announced in open court that he was ready for trial. The court then proceeded to try said case, and the court, after hearing all the evidence on behalf of the plaintiff and defendant, and being fully advised in the premises, found the defendant to be guilty as charged in said complaint. It is therefore ordered and adjudged by the court that the said W. Jenkins be and hereby is fined $200, and that he pay the court cost of this suit, and that default of said defendant paying said fine and costs or any part thereof, that he be confined in the Rampart Jail 1 day for every $2 of said fine and costs he shall fail to pay. It is further ordered by this court, the United States Marshal or any deputy to whom a copy of this shall be delivered, or any award of said any guard of said Rampart Jail, shall immediately execute the order of this court and... Well, anyway, they put Jenkins in the pokey. Next case, number 57, October 29th. A complaint made by the deputy marshal charging the defendant, Felix something or other. It's spelled P-H-E-L-I-X, and the last name is S-P-C-O-T-T-O-R-D-I-T-C-H. He's charged with the crime of vagrancy. Brought into court. And he did enter a plea of not guilty and entered a plea of guilty. Therefore, the court ordered that the plea of not guilty be withdrawn, and that his plea of guilty be entered, and whereupon the said defendant duly entered the plea of guilty. This fellow got off a little easier. He was fined $25 or committed to Rampart Jail 1 day for every $2 that he owed on that fine. On November 7th, 1902, there was a complaint made against James Dweke, D-W-K-E. His crime, using profane and obscene language in a public place, Shocking, isn't that? At any rate, he was found guilty in court, sentenced to pay a fine of $50 and the cost of the court, cost of the case. An entry on November 9th, defendant having served 2 days in jail paid $44 fine and all costs and is hereby ordered discharged. Signed by J. Lindley Green, Commissioner and Ex Officio Justice of the Peace. There's another case on November 11th, 1902, charging Harry Burroughs with using profane and abusive language. The court fined Henry Burroughs a sum of $5 in costs, all of which the defendant paid and was duly discharged by the court. That was November 12th that he had his case completed. November 18th, 1902, case number 62 is United States against versus Corrine, C-O-R-E-N-E, Durfee, D-U-R-F-E-E. Complaint was made by F.D. Wells charging Corrine Durfee with the crime of using profane and abusive language in a public place in Rampart to the annoyance of citizens thereof. The complaint filed and warrant issued for the arrest of the said Corrine Durfee and delivered to Deputy Marshal George Trebilius to execute. Trebilius makes his return that he executed the warrant by taking said defendant into custody and also brings said defendant before the court to answer to the charge. That thereafter, on the said November 10th, 1902, the said defendant was duly arraigned, and after said complaint being read to said defendant, she was asked to plead, wherefore she entered the plea of not guilty and case set for trial November 12th, 1902, and defendant permitted to go on her own recognizance. Next day, November 12th. On this, the 12th day of November, said cause came on regularly to be heard, and on satisfactory showing to the court, said cause was continued at the request of the defendant on account of severe illness of her husband until November 19th, 1902. Action dismissed. Cost tax to government. Another case on the 18th of November, 1902. United States versus P.L. Burkle and P.H. Living. I don't know how it's spelled, L-L-I-V-I-N-G. And Burkle and Living are charged with the crime of petty larceny for stealing a dog at the value of $34 on the 15th day of November 1902. On the 18th day of November 1902, said complaint was sworn by the said James Oldfield, complaint for stealing this dog. The two men asked for postponement so they would have time to prepare their case. So the case was continued until the second day of December 1902. Then I'll read from the docket. This cause coming in to be heard on this, the second day of December 1902, and the defendants having announced that they were ready for a trial, and the court, after having heard all of the evidence in behalf of the plaintiffs and the defendant, and being fully advised in the presence, find that the defendants and each of them are guilty so as charged in the complaint. It is therefore ordered and adjudged by this court that the defendants, P.C. Burkle and P.H. Lilly Bing, be here be and hereby are sentenced to be confined in the Rampart Jail at Rampart, in the Rampart Precinct, 3rd Division of the District of Alaska, at hard labor for 9 months from the date of this order, and that they pay the cost of this suit taxed at $296.90, done in open court this 2nd day of December, 19-2, signed by L. Lindley Green, Commissioner. Reason for the high court costs was mileage costs for the marshal serving the warrant was $4. The mileage cost was $276.25. Doesn't say where they had to go to pick these jokers up. Next case is a charge of trespass. Won't go into that. The next case, also December 18th, 19-2, is trespass. Next case, December 22nd, 19-2, complaint against Hugo Schmidt, charging Hugo Schmidt with petty larceny. Well, Hugo Schmidt was accused, tried, found guilty, sentenced to jail for petty larceny, but it doesn't disclose what his what the larceny was. At any rate, he got a 6 month sentence, no, 5 month sentence, at hard labor, plus court costs, which were $17.25. Case number 68, December 24th, 19-2, the day before Christmas. Gus Reiger, R-E-I-G-E-R, is charged with the crime of petty larceny for stealing two dogs of Stephen, an Indian. The accused in this case, Gus Reiger, was arraigned on December 27th and pleaded not guilty, demanded a jury trial. Justice was a little speedier in those days, for on December 29th, trial was set and 6 men were selected as a jury. I'll read from the last big long paragraph here. This cause coming on for trial on this, the 29th day of December 19-2, the following named persons were found to be qualified and were duly sworn to try said cause, and after all the evidence for the plaintiff and defendants was heard by the jury, and counsel for plaintiff and defendant had made their arguments to the jury, and the court had duly instructed said jury regarding the law and said cause, the jury retired, and after due deliberation returned into court, and in open court returned the following verdict. We, the jury, in the above entitled cause, find the defendant not guilty. The defendant, Gus Reiger, having been duly tried by a jury and found not guilty, it is therefore ordered and adjudged by the court that the defendant, Gus Reiger, be and hereby is discharged, given under my hand this 29th day of December, 19-2. J. Lindley Green, Commissioner, ex officio Justice of Peace for Rampart Precinct. On January 4th, 19-3, Harry L. Thompson is charged with giving spirituous liquors to Luke, an Indian. On January 5th, the defendant, Harry L. Thompson, was brought into court by the marshal. The court advised the defendant of his right to counsel before entering his plea. Said defendant therefore notified the court that he had engaged Charles B. Allen to defend him and informed the court he ready to be arraigned, and after the complaint was read to the defendant, he entered the plea not guilty. The court being unable to try said cause on this date, said trial is set for the 6th day of January, 19-2, At the hour of 2 o'clock p.m., defendant having demanded a trial by jury, the court issued an order to the marshal to summon 6 qualified citizens to appear at the time and place set for the trial of this cause, to act as jurors in said cause, and delivered said order to George G. Perry, United States Marshal for the 3rd Division of the District of Alaska, to execute. Conclusion of this case in this docket, I'll read. The defendant, Harry L. Thompson, having been tried by jury and found guilty of the crime of giving spirituous liquor to an Indian by the name of Luke, and the verdict of said jury having been duly entered and the court having sentenced said defendant to 6 months imprisonment in the Rampart Jail, and that he pay the cost of this prosecution, it is therefore hereby ordered by the court that defendant Harry L. Thompson be confined in the Rampart Jail for 6 months, and that he pay the cost of this prosecution, and in default of the payment of said cost, that he be confined in the Rampart Jail after the termination of the above sentence 1 day for every $2 of said costs, which are taxed at $76.25. Signed, J. Lindley Green, Commissioner, Ex Officio Justice of the Peace, Rampart, Alaska. Case number 75 on February 13th, 1903, United States versus Edwin, a native. There is a complaint issued charging Edwin, an Indian, with the crime of giving spirituous liquors to George, an Indian. In this case, Edwin was found guilty. Final paragraph in the disposition of this case, quote, it is therefore ordered and adjudged by the court that the defendant, Edwin, an Indian, be confined in Rampart Jail for 3 calendar months, and that he pay the fine and cost of this prosecution, cost of prosecution taxed at $11.65, dated this 14th day of February, 1903. Next case, very similar. United States versus Harvey Thompson. Thompson is charged with the crime of giving spirituous liquors to George, an Indian, on the 12th day of February, 1903. Thompson was brought into court and read his rights and in the complaint against him. He asked for the court for a reasonable time to consult with his attorney so he could prepare a defense before the trial. Quoting from the docket, therefore, at the request of the defendant, the cause is continued until February 16th, 1903, at the hour of 2 o'clock p.m., and the court at that time notified the marshal to see the said Charles B. Allen and inform him of the wish of the defendant. A note here, Charles B. Allen was the attorney the defendant wanted to retain. Owing to the fact that the principal witness cannot be procured, rendering it impossible that a conviction can be had, and the further fact that the defendant has already convicted of the crime of embezzlement and sentenced to 1 year imprisonment, the above entitled cause is ordered and hereby is dismissed. Dated the 18th day of February, 1903. It's case number 77, where Harvey Thompson is charged with the crime of petty larceny, charged with stealing a watch and chain of complaining witness George. George is a complaining witness. This case is set for trial on the 16th day of February, 1903, at 12 o'clock noon. The marshal was ordered to notify Charles Allen, Esquire, the defendant's desire to procure his services to conduct his defense. Subpoena issued to John Clinton Mayo, Yeski, an Indian, and Andrew, an Indian, to appear before the above-entitled court and to testify on behalf of the United States. On the same date, said subpoena was delivered to George G. Perry, United States Marshal, to execute. The defendant, Harvey Thompson, having been tried and convicted of the crime of embezzlement and sentenced to a term of 1 year imprisonment in said case involving the same property and the same evidence, this case is hereby dismissed, dated this 18th day of February, 1903. Case number 78, Harvey Thompson. Here's the embezzlement case. He's finally charged. This is on February 16th. He's charged with the embezzlement of a watch and chain belonging to said George, an Indian. The complaint filed and warrant issued by the court for the arrest of said Harvey Thompson and delivered to George G. Perry, United States Marshal, to execute. In this embezzlement case, Thompson had a jury trial, and after about four pages of entries in the court docket here, this is the report of the jury on February 17th, 1903. We, the jury, in the above-entitled cause, find the defendant guilty as charged. It's signed by W.P. Palo, Philip Godley, W.W. Nelson, J.E. Newsbaum, C.G. Stadelman, J.L. Eisman. The court then writes, it is therefore ordered and judged by the court that defendant Harvey Thompson be and is hereby sentenced by this court to be imprisoned in the Rampart Jail for the term of 12 calendar months, and that he pay the cost and disbursement of this prosecution, taxed at $72, dated the 17th day of February, 1903. On February 16th, there's a case, February 16th, 1903, there's a case, United States versus George, an Indian. George, an Indian, is accused of, on the 12th of February, 1903, in the town of Rampart, of using, quote, profane language in a public place, therein to the annoyance of inhabitants therein, end quote. George the Indian pleaded guilty to the charge of using profane language in a public place, therein to the annoyance of inhabitants therein. The commissioner fined George the Indian a sum of $10 and the costs of the court case. I guess George the Indian didn't get put in jail that time. Case number 82 is United States versus Heyikianh, otherwise known as John Kinzer. He's charged with the crime of manufacturing spirituous liquor with the intent to defraud the government out of the revenue therefore.